This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
He did something wrong, and that's what the soul knows. The soul knows what is wrong, and that's why the soul is troubled by it. So the first is a knowledge of right and wrong. Now, there are two ways that comes about. There is a natural law, which is called fitrah, which is the inherent nature, that human beings generally know right and wrong inherently, in the same way that a cat, if you give it food, it'll eat it in front of you, but if it sneaks it, it'll grab it and run away. It's something the cat, and you can say, well, that's because it got hit the last time it did it. But even dogs and cats know when they're taking something legitimately and when they're not. So that's the idea, that human beings have this understanding. Now, the other is that revelation introduces this understanding. So the prophets bring this understanding of good and evil, of khair and shar. It's an old problem. The philosophers talk about the idea, are things good because God says so, or did God tell us to do those things because they're good? The idea of, is something good in and of itself, or is it good because God says so? The dominant opinion amongst Muslim scholars, because they split on this issue, the dominant opinion is that things are good because God says they are. In other words, that the intellect cannot always arrive at what is good, that you need this revelation to come in and tell you. So there are things that we cannot know, and there are things we know. So that's the first one. And this is why in the Quran about Thamud, which is a people that rejected the signs of God and went astray, that it said about them, وَأَمَّا ثَمُودُ فَهَدَيْنَاهُمْ فَاسْتَحَبُّ الْعَمَى عَلَى الْهُدَى. As for Thamud, we guided them, but they preferred blindness over their guidance. So they prefer to continue in their error. And then it becomes a choice, which is very interesting. One of my boys saw this person smoking, and he looked up at the person like, you know, perplexed. The person said to him, don't ever do this. Do you see? And then he asked us, why are they doing it? In other words, if they know it's wrong, why are they doing that? This is where human beings become very complicated, because despite the fact that they know something, they will often go against their best knowledge. And this is because of an imbalance in the soul. When the rational soul is paramount, then these lesser souls, the bestial souls, the irascible and the concupiscent soul, the appetitive soul, the lowest soul, are in a harmony. So this rational soul is controlling factor. And this is what Allah calls the aql, and tells us to use it. If people capitulate to that, then they surrender to the worst qualities of their self, and they end up dragging themselves down into the depths of despair. I mean, worst case scenario is terrible. But a lot of people kind of survive in this middle ground. I mean, there's a lot of humanity, they're surviving in this middle ground. There's some that just have completely surrendered, and they end up crack cocaine addicts or whatever, just completely devastated by their appetites, or alcoholics, these type things, addicted to all of these attempts at getting them in a state of distraction from questions of ultimate concern. The second type of guidance is that which the servant is given this medad, or this help, this divine help, in stages, based on his knowledge or her knowledge and action, right actions. And this is what it meant in the Quran when it says, وَالَّذِينَ اهْتَدَوْا زَادَهُمْ هُدًى وَآتَاهُمْ تَقْوَاهُمْ. Those who took this guidance were increased in the guidance, and we gave them this piety, this taqwa. So the idea, and this comes from a hadith articulated very clearly, in which the Prophet ﷺ said that if you move towards God, a shibr, which is a handspan, God moves towards you a dhira', an arm's length. And if you move towards God an arm's length, God moves towards you like hands outspread. And if you move towards God walking, God moves towards you running, which is not to be understood anthropomorphically, or that God runs. But the idea is that if you do a little bit, all of this help comes to increase you. And this is the second stage of guidance. And then the third stage is nur al-wilaya. And this is the guidance of a person who has achieved a level of obedience and a state of submission with God, that they are in an illuminated state. And so their actions are actions that radiate the light of prophecy. And this is why the Prophet ﷺ said, "Al-ulama warathatul anbiya," that pious scholars are inheritors of prophets. What they inherit is the light of nubuwwah. And so these are these three levels, and this is found in the Quran. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu in tattaqullaha yaj'al lakum furqana. If you have piety, God will give you true discrimination. So you will be able to discriminate in your lives. So that's an example of this huda that emerges out of a recognition of these signs and then the appropriate response that the signs have given. And then on page 55, they give an interesting analogy of the natural world and how Muslims and also Christians and Jews would have looked at it traditionally like this as well, and probably the Eastern traditions. But this idea of how the modern world is looked at, the way the ancients looked at the world was that it was indicating an implicate order. In other words, everything that you saw on the surface indicated something underneath. So they saw it as indeed signs indicating something else. Just as you see a tree, if you understand anything about trees, you realize that the only reason the tree exists is because it has this massive root structure underneath the ground that you can't see. Now, once that root structure becomes seen, the tree dies. You see, the tree dies. So the unseen world is really the source of the seen world. The unseen world cannot come into the seen world, because if it did, the seen world has to disappear. And so when you look at the seen world, what you're really supposed to be recognizing is what are the roots of the seen world. The roots of the seen world are the unseen world. That's the real meaning behind the world. And the thing about trees, people don't realize this, but the root structure is actually more important than the tree. Because what trees do is they keep the earth, they actually hold down soil, like mountains. You know, the Quran says the mountains are pegs. Mountains actually prevent the world from shaking. And this is something known in modern geology. So what you see of the mountain, what's more important is not the seen part of the mountain, it's the unseen part of the mountain. The fact that it's a watad, deep into the earth. But you're only seeing the outward and you think that's amazing. Well, you haven't even seen the root. And that's why the Prophet ﷺ said that the tree that was most like the believer was the palm tree, because it didn't have any roots. In other words, it wasn't deeply planted in the material world. And yet it's this extraordinary tree that does all this wonderful, while it's here, it does all these wonderful things. So the two of them say that the modern world, see, what they say is if you went to a museum and saw a painting by Michelangelo, the question that most people going there will ask themselves is, what is the painter trying to tell me? What's the meaning of this painting? Or if you heard a poem, you could say the same thing. What is the poet trying to tell me? He just didn't make up this stuff. There's something he's trying to convey, a message. Well, what the modern analysis is not meaning. What's the painting made of? Well, it's made out of canvas. What's that material? Well, it's made out of fibers. What's that material? Well, it's made out of these molecules. And what's the actual colors from? Well, those are light reflections, and this one's at a certain frequency, and that's why the yellow is showing up and the blue is at a certain frequency. And so they analyze the painting not for its meaning, but just to explain what it's made up of. And that is the same way that they look at the modern world. They look out there and they want to just analyze everything, but they never tell you what it means. They break it down. It's to reduce things to their components. And then we feel like we've achieved an understanding of the thing. Well, if you take a human being and take out their eyes, take off their ears, take off their hair, dissect them, open up their interior, examine their kidneys and their liver and all these things, do you understand what a human being is? Has that given you knowledge of what a human being is? Well, it's given you a certain knowledge about something about human beings, that they're composed of flesh and blood, and they have hair, and they have liver and kidneys, and the kidney does this, and the liver does that. That's a certain type of... But does that tell you about a human being that can think, that can speak, that can write poetry, that can paint pictures, that can play an instrument, that can do all these extraordinary things? It doesn't tell you anything about that human being. Why does he need to do those things? Why do human beings even pursue such pursuits? So that is the idea of trying to understand signs, is to look beyond this superficial realm. And then he gives this hadith of the Prophet walking through a town with some companions, and he met an old and decrepit woman from one of the tribes who was making wool into thread with a spinning wheel. He greeted her and began speaking to her. He asked her if she had faith in God. She replied that she did. The Prophet asked her why. She said that the spinning wheel does not turn unless there is a hand to turn it, and the heavens cannot turn unless someone is turning them. The Prophet looked at his companions and said, you should have the religion of old women. You see, that's called Iman al-Ajaiz. That's faith. And there's another story of Fakhruddin al-Razi, who was walking with some of his students, and an old woman saw him, and she was amazed at how all these students were fluttering around him. And she said, who's that? And one of his students said, you don't know who that is? He has 1,000 proofs for the existence of God. And she laughed and said, if he didn't have 1,000 doubts for his non-existence, she wouldn't need 1,000 proofs for his existence. And when Fakhruddin al-Razi heard that, he said, you should have the faith of old women. You know, it's interesting because the ancients looked at all of the world and they said this all indicates God. And what the moderns have done, what they have said is that we invented God. God is an invention of man, which is an amazing feat. I mean, that human beings created God in their own image, instead of seeing that this whole thing was created to celebrate these attributes of God. It's seen as an illusion that needs to be given up. Now, the next section goes into the divine names, and this is actually somewhat of a difficult section in that if you look at Hinduism, which has this concept of all of these deities, what they do, they have like Kali and Vishnu, they have a deity that represents the creative force in the universe, and then they have a deity that represents the destructive force in the universe. The reason for that is that people have a difficult time holding opposites in their mind at the same time. So the idea that God is Muhyi and Mumit, that he is bringing to life and he is taking away life, that the same God is doing these two acts, giving life and taking it away, and that there's not some type of contradiction in that. So the idea of the divine names is to understand all of the attributes of God as being, and I don't want to use any analogies, but if I was forced to, it would be like seeing a diamond that has all of these facets to it, and whatever facet you have to be looking at, that is the attribute that you're looking at. So there are times when you witness the mercy of God, and there are other times when you're witnessing the wrath of God, and there are other times when you're witnessing the overpowering nature of God. There's other times when you're witnessing the fact that God is mudhil, he's the one that abases people. And he's also Mu'izz, he's the one that dignifies people. So God has all of these attributes, and that's what the 99 names are. There are ways of understanding the different facets of how the divine is working in the world. That is at the essence of this. And so he talks about, and she talks about, that when we say that God is merciful, that what we're saying is, like La ilaha illallah, there is no God but the merciful.